This podcast is brought to you by Stella Artois. Make every moment unforgettable with Stella Artois. Whether at home with a cozy dinner or dining out, Stella Artois adds a touch of sophistication to any occasion. Stella Artois, a taste worth more. Enjoy responsibly. Welcome to What's Eric Eating? Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map editor Eric Sandler. We are back after a one-week Christmas hiatus. Happy New Year, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy Holidays, Happy nothing at all. Happy end of 2024. We're looking forward to that. Today on the show, it's become a bit of an annual tradition. It's time to look back at the year in dining in Houston. We'll talk about some of our favorite trends from the year, some of our favorite restaurants, the closures that we are the saddest about, and then we'll try to take a little bit of a sneak peek into 2025. To do that, I am joined by four of my regular co-hosts. I'm going to introduce y'all as I see you on my Zoom screen. She is an expert on food, wine, and good times. Felice Sloan, welcome to the show.
Hey. Thanks for having me, Eric.
She is the owner of Heights Grocer, as well as Avondale Food and Wine. Mary Clarkson, welcome to the show.
Howdy, Eric. Happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
He is a Houston hospitality veteran and a co-founder of the Houston Barbecue Festival. Michael Fulmer, I wouldn't want to do this without you.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me. I appreciate that.
She is a staff writer for the Infatuation Houston, participating in her first year in review, our Rookie of the Year, Chelsea Thomas. Welcome to the show.
What up?
Woo-woo!
How are you guys?
All right. I have given y'all some topics to think about. I want to start with what I consider to be kind of the biggest story of the year in Houston dining, which is the Michelin Guide's arrival in Texas. It's been almost 2 months since the announcement was made in the beginning of November. And so I just wanted to know, Felice, let me start with you. I mean, you were at the ceremony. What's your takeaway from in the last 6 weeks or the last couple of months? I mean, how has your thinking about the guide's significance changed since the announcement?
Well, it hasn't changed. I was kind of worried, you know, because I was worried that Houston wouldn't come out like on top, even though I felt we deserved it, you know. So I'm like, I hope Michelin gets it right. You know, they seem to get it right most of the time when I travel, and I felt like they got it right. And the buzz and the energy in the city just kind of, people feel it. People are excited when they come here. They have their guide, you know, for the holidays. So I think they have it right. And I love the energy and the momentum that something like a Michelin brings, because, you know, as you've mentioned before, some people don't know James Beard and all the, you know, some of the ones that food people know, but people know Michelin. And yeah, I just think it's amazing. And the ceremony was good. And I just feel like everyone is taking a part, being able to take part in the ceremony now that it's been announced. And it's a good thing.
I mean, Michael, from your perspective, you know, I'd say Texas barbecue was the big winner, right? There's a overwhelming, you know, plurality of restaurants were barbecue. We saw Corkscrew get a star. We saw places like, you know, the Pit Room, Rosemeyer, Tejas, Killens, Truth all get recognition of one form or another. So, you know, has this changed anything in the barbecue world, this recognition?
Well, a lot of those places are already doing pretty well. We're pretty busy, but something new, someplace new like Rosemeyer. I mean, as you know, you've been there. It's just a trailer off the side of the road in Spring Branch, you know, and if they're part of like sort of that natural progression of moving into brick and mortar, if that's what they want, then this really lays a great platform for that, you know, and we've talked about this, you know, what Michelin did and recognizing barbecue for just the innate culture that it is in this state, and that it's not like some kind of fluke or, you know, local curiosity, that this is a real cuisine that is readily identifiable and embraced, not just by this, you know, by Texans, but is now being exported worldwide. And that was very heartening to me.
I mean, Mary, you kind of keep your fingers on the pulse of the fine dining world. You're my kind of fine dining, you know, cohort whenever there's a new spot to go to. What do you think? I mean, have you noticed a change in some of the fine dining restaurants you've been to? Or people, you know, I know you're tight with the BCN guys, for example. Like I saw them at the ceremony and they were floored. Like they were so excited.
They were thrilled, and you know, they also were celebrating their 10-year anniversary literally right at the same time. So I think a lot of hard work paid off for them. Of course, when they started that journey, they didn't know if Michelin would ever come to Houston. So I think it's a really great reward for their hard work over the years. And they certainly deserve it. I'm excited to see what comes in the next iteration now that the groundwork has kind of been laid, like who gets elevated and maybe who goes away and who gets it that maybe deserved it the first time, but for whatever reason, Michelin didn't make it there. I have heard some experiences of people going to Michelin restaurants and they were disappointed. And since the awards came out, and I think it's a double-edged sword. If a restaurant's hyped up and everything else, I think the regular consumer is going to want it to match what they've heard. And so there's a lot of pressure on these restaurants that have gotten these awards.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Chelsea, you've worked in the restaurant business. You're a keen observer of the scene from your role at the Infatuation. Do you have restaurants that you love that you think Michelin should be taking a look at for 2025?
You know, I don't know. Cause I feel like the way that they are covering is like really geared towards tourism and getting people into the city and getting people looking at the city. So honestly, anything that they are looking at, I'm interested to see what their takes are. Cause I'm like, okay, like what are people looking at? What are they trying to go for? I know there was a lot of barbecue coverage happening, which totally makes sense. And I'm really excited for some of them, especially Rosemeyer. I loved them. And I went to Michael's event for the barbecue throwdown, and Rosemeyer was one of the winners, and I think they're excellent. So I was excited to see a lot of barbecue. I think it'd be fun to see more Vietnamese food representation, because that's one of my all-time favorite foods, one of my favorite things here in Houston. But I think a Vietnamese food representation, maybe a little Tex-Mex, slide some Tex-Mex in there. Be fun.
Right on.
Yeah, I think that's all well said. And I think that's, you know, that's kind of what I'm looking for in year two, right? Is like, let's get into Chinatown a little bit. Let's get up and down Hillcroft a little bit. Like, let's flesh out that Bib Gourmand section just a little bit more. I mean, I'm less concerned about the stars of it all. I mean, I have a soft spot for Basso. We're going to talk about that here very shortly. You know, they got that recommended. I'd love to see them get a star, right? I'd love to see them like pull it all together and elevate what they're doing and earn that star. I think that'd be a really nice validation for them. But, you know, I think there's just things about Michelin that are just going to drive us crazy that are never going to change. Like, they're always going to only be interested in omakase Japanese restaurants, right? Like, we're never like a place like Katarabata or Katami, even though they're excellent, are just like too big and too chaotic and too broad, I guess, for what they're looking for in Japanese restaurants. So I think we're just going to have to kind of lump it. But if they could get into some of these more casual places, you know, like Chelsea, you've written about going to Funk's Kitchen and eating the Lobster Mountain. Michael and I ate there recently for his birthday. I mean, that dish is, everything that they do at Funk's is so excellent. And the live tanks, it's such a quintessential like Cantonese experience that I would like to see places like that or a restaurant even like Aga's that's like so essential to its community get that national recognition or international recognition in this case.
I feel like there's so many classic restaurants here that we all can talk about that we love, that we want more recognition of in any capacity on any platform. So I'm hoping that happens throughout the year, next year, no matter how it comes.
All right. Let's get into our new restaurants of the year, I think. Let's talk about, what are your top three new restaurants that opened in 2024? Michael, why don't you go first?
Top three. There's a lot of good choices. Number one for me would be Kira from the Neo guys. You know, it was a little more financially accessible and yet still represented the high standards that they've set for themselves in terms of not just the food, but the service and the quality. The whole experience was just, man, it was a bullseye for me. Emma, I think in the Heights was something that hit my radar and just kind of seemed to blow up on social media. And I found myself there in the Heights and it lived up to all the hype, you know, just incredible pastries, a real identity of its own, bringing in their own culture. And it's got it to me. It's good enough that like, if I'm in the Heights, I just drive by. And if I don't see a long line, I just pull in whether I've eaten or not, you know, it was that good. And then I guess the third one for me, you know, there's a lot of good choices. I would probably go with, it's tough. I'd say either Bar Blue Dorn or Chop and Block. You know, Chop and Block went, you know, kind of brick and mortar. Let's just put Bar Blue Dorn in there. They really kind of hit. They hit it coming out the door. A lot of times restaurants, when they open, stumble a bit in terms of service, in terms of execution, in terms of tweaking the menu. That's just kind of a natural progression. But they really seem to have their act together. And that was impressive to me.
All right. Well, I assume that everyone has Emma on their list. Am I right?
Emma's up there for sure.
All right. Felice, say something nice about Emma, because I think we were all in agreement that this is one of the most outstanding new restaurants to open in Houston in 2024. Well,
it's so funny because I already knew I was going to love it. So I was late to the party, but I love Emma. I love the vibe. Yeah. When you're talking about it's crowded, the parking, all those things, you know, park in the neighborhood, get there. And just go. I posted up. I went with a friend for lunch and we did a couple of pastries, a couple of things from the menu. But then I went back just to find a reason to go back. And I posted up for the day and did work from there. Right. So people probably may forget that you can just kind of hang out there. It's a whole vibe, you know. I'm happy for them. I'm happy that it's all the things that people say it's worth waiting for. Work your way through the pastries too. Work your way through them.
And the coffee drinks. My God.
Yeah, yeah, Mary, go ahead. Cause I know this is right down the street from Heights Grocer. So I know you've been there quite a bit.
The horchata, literally every of their coffee iterations is delicious. I typically bring staff coffee when I come in on Saturdays and depending on what neighborhood I'm coming from, I get coffee from other places, but this is staff favorite no matter what. It's delicious. And there's nothing I don't like about this place. Normally there's like a category of something that I don't like, but whether it's coffees, whether it's the pastries, I turn my mom onto them. Like my mom was like, I'll drive for that. So that's always a good sign. She was like, where are those pastries from? And like the next week she had gone and pick some up. And then all of their food is great. It's a really cohesive concept and it's outstanding. And I'm so glad that the rest of the city and the country is taking notice of what they're doing, but absolutely delicious. All their mushroom dishes too. And they're, I have nothing but praise.
All right, Chelsea, let me bring you in on this. Cause we actually ate there together. You know, I know it's rated highly by the Infatuation. So from your perspective, talk a little bit about Emma.
Emma is so good. I think the most wonderful thing about it is that it bridges this gap between like wanting to go to a panaderia to get pan dulce, but wanting to get breakfast, but wanting to get lunch. And it's sort of like all smashed together in one. And like Mary said, maybe each one of those could be a little bit better than the other, but Emma executes every single like aspect wonderfully. So you have amazing drinks, amazing pastries, amazing savory food. And like the mushroom tatela is probably one of my absolute favorite dishes that came out this year. I live right down the street from Emma and it is literally so hard to not just go there every single day. It's a wonderful place to sit and like Felice said, work or just have coffee with a friend. That blue corn concha like lives in my head permanently. I think it is just such a beautiful place that's so simple and honest and humble. And it doesn't have to do anything flashy, but make really excellent food for it to be great. And so I love Emma so much.
You know, I kind of think about it as like the evolution of kind of the Mexican breakfast restaurants that we have known for, you know, a generation or more in the city, whether it's like the breakfast tacos at Villa Arcos or, you know, Guadalupano, which is maybe it's like spiritual predecessor in the sense that it's breakfast and lunch and beverages and pastries. And,
yes,
and it's
that's
not
so
that, like,
true.
And it's not that like, it's not that I've ever gone into La Guadalupana and ever thought like, this could be better. Right. I love what they do. Like, but then you go to Emma and you're just like, oh, like, yeah, this is what happens when, you know, these two young chefs who have worked for Hugo Ortega and have traveled to Mexico City and got inspired and just wanted to do things like their way, like at a very high level, and still keep things affordable. I mean, like breakfast for two.
Yeah.
Of all the restaurants we're going to talk
very
about,
accessible.
You know, breakfast for two at Emma is $40, $50. Like if you go all out,
it reminds you, get that. Even if you get that pambazo sandwich, that thing is like a freaking, it's a barge that is a sandwich. Like you could feed a family of four with that thing and it's like $15, you know, it's great.
It reminds me of Panaderia Rosetta in Mexico City.
Yes.
It's like the closest thing I can get without getting on a plane. It's exceptional.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I would encourage anyone who's listening to this that hasn't heard the interview I did with Nick and Stephanie from Emma to just go back, because they were so just excited and engaged, and they're so happy with like the success that they've achieved, that it was just such a fun, one of my favorite episodes of the year, just a really fun conversation. And then, you know, Michael also mentioned Bar Bluedorn, which I think is probably on a few of y'all's lists. Fia, Chelsea, Felice, I know that's on your list too. You know, what I like about Bar Bluedorn, and I've said this before, is that it's just like, if I go to Bluedorn, like Big Bluedorn, you know, First Bluedorn, like I feel like I have to go all out, right? I have to get the oysters three ways. I have to get, you know, a pasta. I have to get a couple of vegetables. It's like a big deal meal, you know, and I love doing that. And that dry aged duck on their menu right now is, I think, one of the most delicious shared entrees in the city and totally worth the money. But what I like about Bar Bluedorn is it's like, it's not really less expensive and it's not really more casual, but I just feel like it is. And so like, I am perfectly fine, like walking in there and just being like, oh yeah, I'll just have a burger and a beer, or I'll just have the fried chicken. And you can do that like on a Tuesday and it doesn't have to be this big occasion. And, you know, it's not, it's like, there are nights like on the weekends, like it's crazy busy, but like during the week, if you go, you know, after eight or whatever, it's not as busy. And so you can just kind of walk in and treat it like the neighborhood restaurant that it is. And I really appreciate like how approachable it is in that sense.
I think it's learned all the lessons of their other concepts, which is one of the reasons I love it most. You can get a sense of, you know, the bar programming being excellent, but it also being casual enough where it feels a little more approachable than Bluedorn. And it's definitely filling a hole in a neighborhood that does not have a lot of options for a restaurant like this. And they've definitely embraced it.
But being it's in a spot that the neighborhood expects, it feels like it's supposed to feel to me, because I used to go there when it was Jonathan's. So the neighborhood's definitely been waiting, right? Like, and when you go there, it feels like, you know, they say it is a tavern style. So to your point, we get the best of their other concepts, right? And it just, you know, you just can kind of feel like you're just kind of chilling, right? Like, yeah, but it's still just as sexy. The food is amazing. The drinks, and, you know, it's just a casual Tuesday night.
All right, Chelsea, you've been waiting. Jump in.
Oh, I just love it. I mean, Bar Bluedorn, second of its name, you know, I think it's like great that it's this, like you said, it's this sleek, sexy, dark wood terrazzo place that you can just feel like you can hole up into. And I think that what's great about it is, yeah, you can totally just go to the bar, get yourself a Delusion of Grandeur cocktail, which I recommend, and just like go in on some tartare and those little freaking potato pancake things they serve it with, which are delicious, and just hang out and watch TV somehow. And it still feels super classy. And I don't know, I feel like I'm in like this. It's not a secret, obviously, it's very obvious, but it feels like I've sort of slipped into another like secret place and I'm just enjoying myself there.
Chelsea, I call those little honey, it's a honeycomb hideout. That's what I call it. It's
yeah.
Honeycomb hideout. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a little hideout for sure. Cause I mean, it's tucked into that neighborhood. And I agree with Mary. It learned all the lessons from Blue Dorn and from Navy Blue and just kind of tweaked it. And it's lovely.
Absolutely. All right, Mary, we've talked about Emma and Bar Blue Dorn. What else is on your list of the best new restaurants of this
year? Come on, Milton's. Hello. My goodness. Another restaurant. I think my favorite restaurants of this year have been ones that feel really cohesive. And Seth Siegel created a beautiful menu here. The service is incredible. The wine list is super affordable. Cresta de Gallo. I want to use a bad word right now of how good it is. I mean, it fucks. Sorry. Like,
totally does. Totally does.
It's worthy of it. It is a yum yum in my rating system. Mate with the cocktails, that little pistachio milk ditty that they're doing and the chilled glass. I don't know. It's exceptional. We drank a beautiful bottle of Burgundy for under $100. Lots to like here.
Yeah. I mean, this is Milton's is on my list too. I mean, you know, if you know, my three are basically Basso, Emma, and Milton's. And what I like about Milton's is just the, like, how approachable it is that it like, we've been kind of waiting for that, like, cool modern Italian American spot. And I thought we were going to get it with Louis' Italian American. I thought back R.I.P. in the day we were going to get it with Arthur Av from the Helen people, and they didn't quite come together, or at least not as cohesively as Milton's has. And just that there's three kinds of parm on the menu, right? Like eggplant, chicken, or veal. And I've had the chicken and the veal, and frankly, the veal, like the savory of the veal is just, it's so good in that format. And you know, the pastas are made in house and they're cooked like not, they're a little more cooked than al dente because it's Italian American food. And it's like, they're supposed to be, you know, not mushy, but not chewy either. And honestly, that's how I like my pastas and, you know, sue me, I guess. But then there's fun stuff on that menu, like surprises that you wouldn't expect, like fried sweetbreads or that ridiculous parsley salad with the guanciale dressing, the warm guanciale. So there's so much to like about that. And, you know, Mary, you mentioned Mate, and it's funny because I had interacted with him at Tongue Cut and at Refuge. And I don't know if it's just like he's matured or if I caught him on a good night because for whatever reason, but he just seems to be enjoying himself more than he did. And those, that like Rubicello cocktail, that's like the kind of a Texas take on a limoncello, or that ridiculous, like, you know, warm pistachio Amaro thing in the chilled glass, and you get that contrast between the hot and cold. I mean, I can't wait to see what he does with the cocktails at Lee's Den, because the cocktails at Milton's have been so good.
I just think that there's a sense of play at Milton's. There's a sense of fun. And I think that's what's the best thing about whenever a Houston restaurant has that sense of whimsy, you know, I think of Nobie's, Nancy's, Nono's Pizza Tavern, like this kind of like tongue-in-cheek weirdness that I think people, that Houstonians know that we have, but I feel like people outside of Houston don't really realize that we have this sort of joke that happens internally at all times. I think Milton's really plays off of that and is serious, but like has a sense of playfulness at the same time. and it achieves it.
Right. They take the food seriously,
yeah,
but they don't take themselves too seriously. I mean, you know, and you just walk up those stairs and you have Benji Levitt's parents in gondolas from Venice from the 60s who are, by the way, Milton and Lee. Like, that's where the names come from. And mm-hmm. and it's just so charming. Like,
shout out to Benji, too, as an operator, because everybody who works in that restaurant legitimately looks very happy. Like, I've never seen Seth this happy.
Well, I mean, awesome. Peter Pierce got out of an ugly situation at Georgia James Steakhouse.
He's
and he
happy.
Brought some of the staff with him. So yeah, they look particularly happy.
And Mate looks great. He's loving doing the cocktails. It's just nice to see everybody like hitting their rhythm at this restaurant.
It's nice to see Kent, the chef Kent DeMoss there too, because I knew him at Bernadine's and he's just such a like lovable, you know.
Yeah, he's a
dude.
Super affable dude, right?
So
he was at Bernadine's, and he was at Downhouse, and he was at Alice Blue, and he was at O'Tour. And I liked O'Tour. Like I didn't feel compelled to go back to O'Tour. And I already have my next reservation for Milton's. I'm talking with other people about when they want to go to Milton's. It's become that restaurant for me that I just see myself like really crushing on and going to a lot for the next few months.
I agree.
All right, Chelsea, what else is on your list of the best new restaurants? What haven't we talked about yet?
Basso. Basso, baby.
Yeah.
Basso. Holy crap. This restaurant is so good. Eric and I, you and I went at the beginning of the year, and I remember you and I had a conversation while we were sitting down at dinner, and I said, if this restaurant, it has all the components and knew how to cook the food, it knew what flavor combinations needed to be there. It knew how to plate it. It knew how to present it. But the seasoning, like just something needed a little bit. There needed a little bit more tweaking, a little more editing. And I was like, damn, if this can come together, if they can get this sorted, figured out, like, whoa, it's going to be crazy go nuts in here. And so at the Infatuation, we put it on our hit list. We thought it was a great place to go. I think I initially rated it around an 8.4. And I went back a couple of months ago and I had to like literally tell myself in my head while I was eating to not make a sheer face of joy and like
you're like poker face, poker face.
Oh, I was like poker face while you eat this freaking food, you know, because Max, the chef, was like right there and I was like, you know, trying not to give myself away. And holy crap, like it's been a very long time since I've eaten food that has like surprised me in a good way and surprised me and delighted me in a way that makes me think like, holy crap, like what kind of alchemy is like going on here? Because the Red Deer Tartare with that yuzu kosho is like unreal, and the baked feta is so creamy, and they have that crazy endive dish with the hazelnuts and the blackberries. I'm just like, what the frick is going on here?
No, I'm glad that you mentioned that endive salad, because you know in the summer it was a roasted peach with cheese and horseradish, and it's like, okay, mm-hmm. Max knew. It's like, okay, I want to experiment with horseradish. That's an herb that we only get basically in prime rib and Bloody Marys. And so like the roasted peach was cool, but it's like now it's bitter endive and sweet blackberries and just the way and the spiciness of the horseradish and the way they all come together. And that's what I appreciate the most about Basso, is like how fast it's evolving.
Oh, yeah.
As Max and Jacques kind of learn these ingredients and the city and what their diners will accept from them. And you mentioned the mushroom tutella from Emma as one of the dishes of the year. And I completely agree. But for Basso, it's that pork chop. And as a Jewish person, I don't eat a lot of pork chops. Like I just didn't grow up with them. I don't crave them. But that pork chop, again, with the pork jowl dressing or condiment on the top of it, it's so just raw horsepower, mind-blowing, delicious that like I can't. Like I could get that again and again.
I think also with Basso, it's the same thing as Milton's, where you get this like sense of playfulness, because like the pork is served like literally a giant slab of pork on a tiny plate. And they're like, you know, it's just so silly, but amazing. And the food is serious, but like the flavor combinations are just so kooky, and you don't think that they should work, and they totally work. And, you know, I re-reviewed Basso, and we put it as one of our top 25 restaurants in Houston, because it is just, I think it's like really getting into high gear right now. And I'm so excited to see how it continues.
All right, Felice, what is a restaurant we haven't talked about that's on your list for the best new restaurants?
For me, you already know it's Credence.
I asked you specifically because I wanted you to talk about Credence.
I know. So I know you, Eric. I know you did. So
we are not foregone conclusions over here, but maybe a little.
Yeah, so all the ones that we've named are great on my list. Credence, for me, I just think it's great. So they do classic well with a couple of, you know, sprinkles of fun things in there, right? Like, I love, they're doing the live fire cooking. One of my favorite bites, I'm going to say it now because I know you're going to ask it, but one of my favorite bites for me is that deviled crab. It's just amazing. But even the snapper, right? Like, the me and you were talking, I'm like, it's snapper, but they just take it to the next level. The crab fried rice, I just find myself going back. You're a shrimp cocktail guy. You always get shrimp cocktails. I tell people, I'm like, yeah, the shrimp cocktail is even good. And so I love it. I love the vibe. The cocktails there are very nice. And the cool thing about, you know, if you get cocktails at Credence, if you go to their speakeasy, which is reservations only, completely different cocktail program. They're different. They're not serving the same cocktail. So I always tell people, if you have time, if you're going for dinner and you want a night out, enjoy going over to Sidecar as well.
Yeah. You know, when this restaurant was first announced, I didn't quite understand what Levi was up to. Levi Good was up to, because I was like, why isn't this Good Company Steakhouse or Good Company Grill or Good Company? Like, why move away from the Good Company branding that your family has literally spent 50 years, like, you know, promoting and banging into people's heads?
Right.
And then you go to Credence and you're like, okay, because by not calling it Good Company, you're free of, we don't have to have the campuchano, we don't have to have the pecan pie. It doesn't necessarily read as family friendly, because this is a very, like, you can take your well-behaved children there, but this is a restaurant for adults to eat, like, really fine food cooked over live fire. It's a massive space. Like, nobody opens, you know, 200, 300 seat restaurants anymore, except for steakhouses and apparently Levi Good. And, and that it's, but it's, but it's,
is it
just,
that big?
It's big. I mean, it's big. 'Cause between the bar area is separate. Like, the restaurant has its own kind of bar lounge area and the main dining room. And then there's also the speakeasy that's got its own entrance and its own menu. And so just that they're working with so much room and operating at such a high level. I've been here a couple of times. I'd really like to go back for brunch at some point just to kind of get a little broader flavor of what they're doing. But this was such a pleasant surprise for me to see it be as good as it is and as quickly as it has become. I think that kind of gives like a good overview of the best new restaurants of the year. Michael, let me bring you back in. You've been quiet. what are a couple of your favorite dishes that you ate this year that didn't come from one of the restaurants we've already talked about?
Well, I mean, the scallop at Ishtia, you know, at Ishtia, of course, is the new iteration from Eculent that you and I dined at. And it was, you know, just a barrage of courses. And some of them were really well considered and executed. And for me, the scallop there was just fantastic. It was just, there was a real sense of, we'll use that word whimsy, you know, it was quite a show, but the proof was in the pudding. It was like incredible. The texture, the quality of it was fantastic. The bowls at Chop and Block, to some extent, he's brought a lot of the menu from, you know, the Post there, but there's some new things on there that are just fantastic. Like, everything, I could eat there every week. Chop and Block is just so good. And as a, you know, as someone who is a very dedicated carnivore, you know, operating in the world I do, the vegetarian dishes there are just stellar. I mean, they're full of flavor. They're so nuanced, but, you know, they're bold when you want them to be. And it is a stunningly beautiful restaurant. I know we're talking about dishes, but it's a beautiful restaurant. I know we talked about Milton's, but, you know, for me, because it wasn't on my list, the parsley salad there was one of the best dishes I had all year. You know, you say parsley salad, and I pretty much want to run, if not get in my car, get as far away. But in this case, you know, man, they really, the guanciale over it, like all that flavor from it, it's done tableside. I couldn't get enough of it. It was absolutely outstanding. And it wasn't overwrought with that. You know, it was just a really well-balanced dish. And then the last thing I would put in was, you know, as we've seen restaurants navigate the high cost of product, particularly in the world of beef, as the costs have really gone through the roof and accessibility is somewhat of an issue on some of the more desired prime cuts, seeing the Denver cut at Octo, Denver cut is one of my favorite. It comes off the side near the short loin. So it's this wonderful balance of great flavor, but good marbling. And it's, and for a very concise and very tight little menu there, it's a real standout.
Chelsea, I saw you wave. So, and I wanted to talk about Octo too. So go ahead.
Oh, okay. I'll be the Octo segue, 'cause that was one of mine. I love Octo. I love the tuna tartare dish there. I mean, I have a lot of favorites. The actual octopus there with the fennel salad is incredible, but that tuna tartare, that super floral, like sheerest shoyu sauce they pour over a tableside, like I want to drink a gallon of that stuff. It's so good. That I think a lot of their dishes are on my like favorite dish list for sure. And that Denver cut, you're right, Michael, is really good quality. The sauce is delicious. So yeah, I would put those up there for sure.
I liked their small dishes here.
Mm-hmm.
The tiger shrimp with the beurre blanc, the eggplant carpaccio, killer.
Oh, the eggplant carpaccio is so good.
Oh, it is. God, it's fantastic. And it's beautiful, so too. Like, the plating there is really spot on, you know?
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
It's the hipper sibling of Doris and more casual, but still feels really upscale and intimate. Really good date spot. Really good.
Yeah, great date spot.
Good spot mm-hmm. to new people too. Yeah.
Yeah. It, what I like is it's kind of a blend. It kind of takes the kind of the lively bar at Doris. That's like a real hangout spot with the lighter fare from Hamsa. And then it kind of broadens because it's not explicitly Israeli. They do Greek, they do Italian. I mean, they're doing freaking French, like a classic steak Rossini with seared foie gras on it. Like, it doesn't get more French than that.
And the lighting is dark and sexy and moody and all the yum yums.
Yeah, it's very central.
It is.
Yeah,
it
and
is
somehow
all
they
good
turned
things.
The somehow they turned a Montrose Collective side street patio into like a really cute spot. Also, so we've managed to achieve that, which is I think a feat in itself.
Somebody tried to tell me that they were going to try to do like brunch bagatelle style, and I was like, Jesus Christ! I was like, okay, who knew? Let's go, Montrose Collective.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think dinner only makes sense for them. I don't know. I mean, maybe they'll figure out a way to make brunch work. But I that is a restaurant that I've been really impressed with, and somewhere I've been angling to go back to. I've just got to I got to figure it out. All right. You know, I asked you just briefly, is there like a more established Houston restaurant that you either revisited after a long hiatus or like went to for the first time? And we've already talked about Funk's Kitchen a little bit, but that's the one for me where it's like I hadn't been since before the fire. I'd had a couple of negative service experiences from the dim sum where it's just like it was so chaotic and we didn't fully appreciate what was going on. And so to go back for dinner and to see it lively and to eat the lobster mountain and the fried mushrooms and the walnut shrimp and some of the other dishes that we tried,
that's
and just have
tofu.
It be like, yeah, just have it be like so delicious. That was a pleasant surprise for me. I'm so glad we did that. Felice, what about you? What's a place that you either rediscovered or went to for the first time?
Well, I'll say rediscovered because I've moved down the menu and forgot how much I love. So we know we love Cotta Rabata, right? But I always get the specials or, you know, just, and I went probably a couple months ago with one of my friends and said, hey, let me introduce you to Cotta Rabata. And I forgot about how good that Sando is, right? And I'm like, it's literally one of the best. And I always look for restaurants. I'm like, what is like one of your favorite bites in the city? It's literally one of my favorite bites in the city. And I had moved away from it. And I'm right here. Like, I work right near it. And I went the other, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to stop thinking about it. I want to get it every week. So it would be the Sando at Cotta because it's so good.
Mary, what about you?
I'm, you know, like you said earlier, BCN is a favorite of mine. So seeing how they're evolving from pre-Michelin to post-Michelin, it's been interesting. They've been doing some menu changes and updates. And for me, that's, I'm just excited of how they take everything that they've learned and how they put it into what the next year looks like for them. I really want to see this wine list get even more developed than it is. It's exclusively Spanish, and their gin and tonic program is delicious. And I think Luis's food is only getting better, if that's even possible.
Having talked to the owner, Nacho Torres, over the years, I could just see him like huddling his staff together, being like, okay, one star is cool, but let's be two stars. Like, let's be the first Texas restaurant to get
100%.
And to like really like want to drive that and earn that kind of recognition. So I'm not surprised to hear that. Michael, what about you? What's a place you revisited this year after an absence?
You know what? Il Hildegense. Longpoint. I hadn't been a while, but it's, you know, it's really well known for its cabrito on Sunday. And deservedly so. But you know what's far better is their lamb barbacoa. It is just, you know, we're starting to see more. This is really like the year of lamb and lamb barbacoa. And you're going to see a lot more of it, not just in Houston, but throughout Texas. And they are, man, they hit the nail on the head years ago. And it's just fantastic. And I went back there and had it. And it was even better than I remember. So that, you know, that's a, you know, I'm reticent to use the word, but it is an icon of Houston.
Chelsea, what about you?
I would say this year, for the first time, I went to a place called San Buon Cafe, which some people might recognize as this restaurant that had like a giant fire neon sign in, off the 45 freeway in South Houston. It's a Vietnamese place, and I went there because they have hot pot. And also, I just wanted to check it out. And it was ridiculously good. They have great betel leaves. They have this amazing, like, lotus root salad, great hot pot. I liked the steamed goat dishes they have there, too. It was, like, a really, like, expansive, wonderful menu. But I think the other thing that's really amazing about it is this place is, like, a whole-ass vibe. It's wild in there. It's, like, a big bar. The restaurant's huge. There's this miniature stage that they've set up with lawn chairs as an audience for karaoke. There's like multiple aquariums. You go outside and it's sort of this like multi-story built out patio with a giant koi pond that you can, if you bring quarters, you could feed the koi fish. And there's a waterfall and a bridge over the waterfall and a second story patio that overlooks a trailer park. And
This is the place near Hobby Airport.
Yes, I'm obsessed with this place.
I have never been there. It's on my list. I got to go.
It's so good. I think the people that were working there were really confused as to why I was there, but I loved it. I had a fabulous time. It's like every table is like on a different level inside. It's wild the way they've built it out. It's like a fun house. I love it. I want to go. I literally want to rent out the patio for like my birthday and have a birthday party there. And
I'm coming.
Feed the koi fish. We're taking prom photos on the waterfall bridge. Like, this is what I wanted. It's so good. And I recommend everyone go there. They're open super late on the weekends. I bet the karaoke is crazy. So yeah, this is like a hidden gem. Absolutely recommend.
You know, the one other one, Chelsea, just that I went to with you was Tepe, the Japanese restaurant. In, I guess, kind of the extended Galleria
area, Grove.
I hadn't been there in years. And I just feel like it's relatively affordable. The quality I thought was very good. The hospitality, like they write the name of the person who made the reservation on a little chalkboard and put it on the table. And I just like, it was just like friendly and tasty. And we had such a good time there. And it's a place that had really kind of fallen off my radar. And I just had such a good meal there. All right, let's wrap this up. Let's look ahead to 2025. Felice, why don't I start with you? What are one or two places you're looking forward to that are scheduled to open next year?
Oh, Nick's Place, Agnes Sherman. I'm looking forward to it big time. That's probably the one, if I think about, there may be a couple, but that's the one that I think I'm more excited about.
Yeah, I'm, Michael, you and I just had a couple of preview dishes from Agnes and Sherman at a brunch at Bar Blue Door. And so what did you think about those dishes that we tried?
Oh, man, it was so good. Even like something simple, like a waffle, with the sambal butter, sometimes it's like the really simple things that are the hardest to execute well. And this is some guy. This is Nick working in a restaurant kitchen that he's not accustomed to. A lot of what makes restaurants work well and smoothly is, it's just everything's kind of becomes ingrained, that muscle memory. So here he is in this foreign environment and he just knocked it out of the park. It was delicious. And so it wasn't just that they were well conceived. They were well executed in a foreign environment. So that speaks well to when he gets in his, in his home, in his sanctuary. We're going to see some really special things, I think.
He's going to do the damn thing. I'm excited.
Yeah, coming, I don't know. They're being a little bit cagey. They're building, I think we'll see that in February or March in the former Alice Blue Space on 19th Street. Mm-hmm. Michael, what else is on your list? What else are you looking forward to?
You know what? It's no secret that Terry Blacks is coming to town. Terry Blacks does huge volume, okay? And usually volume and quality can be sometimes sort of this can be an inverse relationship with that. And they have really figured out how to do Trinity and how to do what they do and do it well and do crazy big numbers. It's one of those places I send when people go to Austin and they don't want to wait in lines or lines that don't move very quickly. They understand line management. They understand, who's coming in the restaurant and how to serve them. And they do an excellent job, And so while it might not be, an interpretation from, a different culture, or they might not be doing something like wildly creative, they're doing basic Trinity here, but they execute it at a high level. And that to me is always worth going to.
Mary, what's on your list? What are you looking forward to for 2025?
I've got a couple ones. Sean Gall's Camaraderie, I'm excited about. It's in the Heights. It's on 11th. He was the baker at Goodnight Hospitality, Rosie, all of that. I'm excited to see what he does there. And I'm also excited to see Melrose's food program in the new year from Tatamo, from the chef from there. So I think Emmanuel's food is not going to be anything like what Tatamo is. So I'm kind of just excited to see what riffs he does on food for them and their cocktail space. It's a really beautiful space that took over the former LaGrange space in Montrose.
Yeah. What's funny is when I talked to the three guys that own that place, they said they had tasked Emmanuel with making Houston's best chicken fingers or best chicken tenders.
Fuck yeah.
So I'm real curious to see if he's achieved that. Cause I'm not above it. I'm not too good for nostalgic chicken tenders in a high style cocktail bar.
I'm a high low girl. Give me some bougie chicken fingers and bar snacks. Like I know he was going to do like a pig in a blanket. Like I want to see that.
All right, Chelsea, what's on your list? What are you looking forward to?
Number one is Proceeded, the restaurant at Hotel St. Augustine by the Blue Dorn folks. I'm really excited to see that come together. I've already seen like a million, me and my girlies went to the bar at St. Augustine photos on my Instagram feed. It's gorgeous. I love everything they're doing there. when I was living off of West Main in Montrose, I used to walk by that project every single day. And so I'm really excited for that to come to fruition and see what Bluedorn's doing in that space. And I think that's pretty expected. Everyone's really looking forward to that. But also something that, you know, you announced that I'm really looking forward to is Boost Burgers getting a brick and mortar. And Boudreaux has been like killing it with the pop-ups. He's been doing a billion pop-ups and he always does them on Sundays, which pisses me off because I can never go. But I'm really excited to see like what he does with his own brick and mortar space. It's going to be super fun. And I know he's been like grinding really hard to do that. And so that is probably my ultimate number, my number one, the little guy, new brick and mortar spot, Boost Burgers.
Yeah. I'm really excited for Joseph Boudreaux. I got in on Boost Burgers pretty early and I like a smash burger. I just think there's something about that burger grind that he does and that sauce that he makes and the care that he puts into everything that he does. It's just so good. And I think, you know, it's a real simple little thing. It's like a kiosk on the Navigation Esplanade. Like it's not some big restaurant. And I think he'll be able to manage that pretty effectively. And it'll be such a nice boon to that area. It's like, you know, I think, you know, you've got Ninfa's and El Tiempo and Roostar and Jonathan's the Rub all over there. And I think this will just be for people who live in the area, especially like such a nice complement to all of those options. Then I think that'll be really fun. I affirm, obviously Camaraderie is a place I'm super excited about. Perseid is a place I'm super excited about. Agnes and Sherman, like I can't wait. You know, the other one that's kind of on my radar is Latuli, which is Brian Caswell's new spot that's opening out like on I-10, like kind of in that, you know, Spring Branch Memorial Villages area. And it's just, you know, I liked Reef a lot in its heyday. I liked what he was doing at the hotel downtown at Oxbow 7 that unfortunately didn't last very long. And I think people forget like Bryant, like, and even I even liked what he did at Postscript. Like, you know, obviously he was just kind of consulting and that stuff didn't last very long. But, you know, I think like Brian is someone who like really understands what Houstonians like to eat. And I think whatever he does is going to be pretty exciting. And I kind of look forward to all that. And I will say like, I've been kind of reaching out to people like Nick Wong will be on this podcast at some point in 2025. Sean Gall from Camaraderie will be on this podcast at some point. Joseph Boudreaux will be on this podcast. Like we will hear from all of these people as those restaurants like get ready to open. So don't worry, listeners. Like I'm on it. I got you. We're gonna keep doing it real big here in 2025. Well, folks, I gotta say it's been like a solid hour. So I don't wanna linger too long. Anybody have any last words or final thoughts you want to share before we wrap this up?
I just want to say RIP Dinette. Why did you leave us so soon? That was rude. And two, if we do a draft next year, I want Vietnamese food on the short list.
Oh yeah. Yeah. See, give me your proposed drafts for next year. Chelsea, you want Vietnamese food? Michael, how about you? What do you want us to draft in 2025?
You know, I refuse to say burgers because that just, you know, that's just too easy and too obvious. I would go with
and we
Chinese.
Did it. And we've also done it. So we did.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's right. We did. Well, okay. So for me, it would be Chinese. It would be Chinese. Yeah.
Like Chinatown Pearl. Best of Chinatown.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
I was going to say desserts, even though I don't eat desserts, I have all the categories. Like people love desserts. Eric, surprised you haven't done it.
And ice cream dessert, a fruit dessert, a coffee. I can sort of see the risks. I think Vietnamese food is definitely going to happen. You know, I think we're going to do date night too, because that was so successful this year. I want to do it again with different panelists, and different restaurants. I just think that's going to be really fun. So, but yes, I love our draft episodes. They're always fun for me. And so we will keep that going in 2025. And just to say,
RIP Elro. Sorry.
Yeah. RIP Elro, RIP Damien's, Dinette, you know, so many restaurants we lost this year. It's been, you know, it's been tough in that way, but You know, I just want to say, like, from a podcast perspective, this has been a really incredible year, and to have had so many fun draft episodes, to have worked a new co-host into the mix, to have had that episode with Bobby Hugel where we talked about how expensive things are now and how different the economic environment is. That was really one of my good. Favorite episodes of the year.
So good.
So I just want to thank everybody. I want to thank all of y'all and Monica Dana, who couldn't be here. I want to thank our producer, Michael Carroll, for all of his hard work behind the scenes. And of course, I want to thank everybody who listens to the show, because, you know, I really appreciate all the engagement I get on social media, or when I'm out in public and you see me and you want to talk to me about things you've heard on the show or ideas you've had from the show. Please keep DMing me. Please keep emailing me. Please keep coming up to me in public, because knowing how much you enjoy what we do makes this worth it. So thanks to everybody. Happy New Year. Join me on Thursday, when my guest will be Alex Smith from Atlas Restaurants.
See you in 2025.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Happy
Bye, New y'all. Years.
Bye.